Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
Jim Potts back on the air, and as always, thank you so much for listening to me, and I do appreciate that. And I hope that everybody remembered to turn their clocks back last night so you won't miss anything. But at any rate, hopefully you did that, and you're online with me right now listening. Hey, before I get started, I always want to mention that if anybody ever wants to call in, it's 818-602-4929. Or you can email me at listenupwithjp@pottsandassociates.com. And if you want to get my blogs or my email blast about upcoming show topics, text Potts Associates and text that to 22828 and simply enter your email address and you'll be on our list for the email blast. That's a very growing list right now, so thank you all who have been signing up. Text Potts Associates and text that to 22828. And you're good to go. And again, the call-in number is 818-602-4929. Okay, right now we're going to go ahead and get started. And as always, you know I like to start off by talking about my emails. But today, just to give you an idea about the topics once again, for those of you who did not get the email blast, we're going to be talking about the new face of terrorism in 2019. Very important. And then we're also going to be talking about the FBI that just put a warning out regarding the growing threat that we're being faced with. And I'll talk more about that. And then we're also going to be talking about, we've talked about the parental responsibility, and I keep getting emails. So this is a very hot topic for people. So it's what I did a little bit more research in terms of exactly which states actually have parents financially responsible for the acts of their children. So I'm not going to go through all of the states, but I'm going to give you some of the key ones anyway. And I thought it was pretty interesting. So we'll see. At any rate, okay, let's get busy with these emails. First one. Jim, I heard on the news that ISIS is planning to retaliate because we killed their top two leaders. They were saying we were on alert now. What exactly does that mean to us on a daily basis? My family and I are very concerned. We're worried that something is going to happen. Do you have any thoughts that you would like to share with us on the air? And that's signed by Jill from Toms River, New Jersey. Well, Jill, let me tell you something. First of all, a lot of people don't exactly know what we mean by all these threat levels and things of that nature. It's been a while since I discussed threat levels. So when they get on the news and they're talking about these things, and I think I know who you were talking about. There was a general that came out the other day and said that because of the fact that we killed the top two leaders for ISIS, that now, you know, our threat level has gone up. First of all, let me just go back in time a little bit. The Homeland Security Advisory System was a color-coded system and, you know, threat advisory scale. And I'll go through the colors in a moment. And it showed us that there were different levels that would trigger specific actions by, well, different federal agencies and state and local governments as well. And the purpose of that was to provide a level of security at some of the airports and some of the public facilities. So when you hear them talk about the threat levels and things of that nature, they're talking about, a little bit more specifically, airports and public facilities. And back then, it was often called the terror alert level by the U.S. media. Now, look. The system was originally created because of 9/11, okay? And 9/11 has been quite some time ago. Not that that should mean that we should let our guard down, of course. It was meant to provide a comprehensive and effective means to disseminate information regarding the risk of terrorist acts to federal, state, and local authorities, and also to the American people, all right? So that was the purpose of it. Now, though, the system has actually been replaced, Jill, back in 2011. And the new system is now called the National Terrorism Advisory System. They kind of didn't like calling it the terror alert level because some people in the media felt that that was too harsh. So what we have going on now is that we are, yes, we are on an alert level. They didn't say specifically what kind of alert level we were on, so I did see a couple of news broadcasts about that. But just as a reminder to everybody that the Homeland Security Advisory System, it puts out five different levels, so you need to be aware of that, okay? Just in case you're not. The first level, which is the lowest level, is green. So if they say it's a green advisory, then we'll be notified locally on your channels and things of that nature. But you very rarely will see green, okay? So green is a low risk of terrorist attacks. Blue is what we call guarded, guarded. And that just means that there's a general risk of terrorist attack. Then elevated is yellow. And that basically is a significant risk of terrorist attacks. Orange is high for a high risk of terrorist attacks. And then the most severe one, of course, is severe. It's red. And that's a severe risk of terrorist attacks. Now, look, when you hear these individuals and they get on the news and they're talking about this, it's true. ISIS, because the top two leaders were killed, the replacement, so to speak, of those two individuals who now is on the top, he has put out that he has every intention of retaliating against the United States for having killed the top two leaders. Now, not for us to become complacent, but just understand that this is typical is what's going to happen. Same thing happened when Osama bin Laden got killed. But, you got to understand also that some of this is they got to actually be able to do this. And I'll talk a little bit more about this later, as well. But Jill, I don't want you guys walking around paranoid about this. They will let us know if something is going on. But I would say in the interim, anytime you're at major events like a Boston Marathon, I think there was just a marathon in New York City, as a matter of fact, or maybe there's one that's getting ready to come up. I don't remember. But like on an example like with that one, because of the thousands of people who will be there, basically is what's going to happen is that they will be on a high alert anyway. And a lot of those events now across the country are on always going to be on an alert status. So if you're really concerned about it with your family, just avoid those kind of major events right now because ISIS isn't going to be looking to, go into the local grocery store or the movie theater. It's not like that. It's going to be with its thousands of people. All right. So, and something that's televised, that's another thing for them. ISIS, Al-Qaeda, they always like that kind of publicity. So just to let you know that. So, Jill, you guys can relax a little bit, but as always, I tell people to always be aware of your surroundings and where you're going. Okay? All right. Next email. Jim, Oklahoma has now passed a law that its citizens can now carry concealed or unconcealed guns without a background check or any training. That sounds completely insane to me. Do you agree? And that's from Jose from Albuquerque, New Mexico. Well, Jose, I got to tell you honestly, I do agree. I agree with you. Look, first of all, understand something, people. There are 31 states right now that have these open carry laws. Some of them are a little bit more stricter than others in terms of background checks. But basically, if you clear a background check, you're going to be cleared to carry a gun. Now, this business about not having to worry about being trained and, along with that. I don't agree with that. I think that, as I said on one of my previous shows, my regular listeners may remember that we did like a two-part episode on the liability associated with carrying these guns. So I think that there should be tighter controls on that, quite frankly. And anybody that's got an opinion about it can always call in 818-602-4929. But, I think that there should be better controls over it. I don't think you should just be able to give them to anybody. This business about carrying these weapons, and in Oklahoma, you can either carry it concealed or unconcealed. There's a few of these states where you can carry a gun, but the gun has to be empty. Now, explain that one to me. I don't understand that one at all. Because if you turn around and carry an empty gun and somebody's got one that's not empty, and you pull your empty gun out, you could be in trouble. That's how I look at it. I guess the only thing you'll be able to do is throw it at them. But from my perspective, I'm not going to carry an unloaded gun, you know, in the event that the other person has one. Here I go and pull out this thing that's not going to do me any good. But just to give you some ideas, Jose, I mean, there's 31 states, just to name off a few of them. Oh, and by the way, California, there's only about five states that really, you know, they don't really permit this business about open carry. I mean, they give out CCWs in some of the counties, but in terms of the state, the answer is no. I mean, just to give you an idea about a few, Iowa, Utah, Colorado, Pennsylvania, Minnesota, Nevada, Delaware, New Mexico, Idaho, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, New Jersey, Oregon, Hawaii, and Maryland, and now Oklahoma. So just to give you an idea, I covered a lot of states. I know South Carolina does not permit it as well. Florida does not permit it like that, believe it or not. And as you know, Texas does, which is one of them as well. So, you know, I think anybody carrying a gun should be properly trained. I don't think that they should just get out there with this, you know, without having to pass some kind of background test check as well. So, Jose, I can understand what you're saying, and yes, I completely agree with you. So we'll see how that all turns out. You know, on a day-by-day basis, we really don't hear a lot about, you know, open warfare in some of these states with these open carry states, quite frankly. I know there's been some issues down in Texas, but anyway, we just have to wait and see what happens. But no, I don't agree with that. When you have a weapon, you need to be trained on the weapon and then learn how to use it responsibly. And I think that's part of the training. So if anybody disagrees with that, let me know. Or agrees, I don't know, whatever the case may be. But just don't be out there buying these guns, even if you have the opportunities, the way I look at it. Home protection is one thing. So don't write to me about that. I agree about home protection. Again, just learn to use those things responsibly, as well as keeping them secure so kids can't get them. Or some of these relatives that come to your house and now they take the guns and go and do shootings, because that's happened also. Okay, Jose, there you go. I agree with you, buddy. Let's take a look at number three now. Jim, I'm curious about TSA. I have seen things with them that make me concerned if they are doing a thorough job. I have slipped past TSA, and if I can do it, certainly terrorists can. Are you concerned? Pete from Oceanside, California. Pete, the first thing I want to tell you is that you know, that you're playing with fire. Don't be trying to slip things past TSA and get yourself in trouble, because these guys are out there trying to do their jobs, and I understand what you're saying, but in the same token, they're there for a reason to try to do their job. And I would agree that, look, as much as they probably are trying to do everything 100%, sometimes it gets a little tougher than that. They're out there trying to protect us, and I think that they're doing a good job. Now, I will tell you that every time I fly and I go through TSA, I always tell them, hey, thanks for keeping us safe. So let me just tell you, listeners, when you're out there, you see TSA, same thing. Always tell them thanks for keeping us safe. These guys always appreciate it when I tell them that. Now, as what I did, because you had expressed this concern, I turned around and I looked up and actually was able to get some information regarding TSA. So just to let you know and to put your minds somewhat at ease about this business with TSA, from an aviation security standpoint, is what I was able to find out was that they were responsible, believe it or not, for 440 federalized airports, and that's federalized airports. So it's not going to apply to some of these private airports. All right, there's 440 of them. And they've got now more than 43,000 transportation security officers. So that's pretty good. I mean, that's a lot. That's a lot that's out there. And they've also got more than 600 aviation transportation security inspectors to ensure regulatory compliance with the standards that they're supposed to have. Now, I will tell you that nearly 50% of TSA officers have now at least 5 years of experience or more, all right, on counterterrorism. You know, so they're counterterrorism professionals at this point, because they would have to be, because they would have to be kept up on things to look out for, et cetera. Now, nearly 20% of TSA employees, believe it or not, are veterans, or they're still serving. Now, that I did not realize, so I think that that's very important. Now, just to give you, throw some other numbers at you, TSA screens more than 2 million passengers daily. at over 750 million a year. That's a lot of screening. And is what they've done. They have 1.4 million checked items for explosives and other dangerous items, all right, that they find. Checked items, guys, all right? Now, and as you know what that means by checked items, so that means those are things in people's suitcases. Because remember, they check their luggage. So the luggage just goes on through. But you know, TSA checks luggage. I know we had these on our suitcases. There's suitcases that you can get that are TSA controlled only, which means that only TSA can open it up once you lock it. And there, even if it's a combination lock on there. Now, I know that, and I know that they check it because I've had those that have been checked by TSA because I can tell by the way that things are rearranged in my suitcase sometimes. And because, you know, you're protecting yourself also from these people that are non-TSA people like the baggage handlers that might, in fact, go in suitcases and take things out of there. So this way, only TSA. So you can get TSA special locked luggage. So just to let you know that. Now, just to throw some other numbers at you, TSA screens 5.5 million carry-on items. And what are they looking for? Explosives and other prohibited items. Every day, all right? Every day, 5.5 million carry-on items. And that's a lot. You've gone through the screening process. Anything that looks weird in there, they always stop it. They take it out. They ask about it. Now, TSA, you guys, is actually responsible for the security of over 23,000 domestic flights per day. And yes, that's a lot. And now I know what you're thinking. It's like, wait a minute, that's a lot. How are they in all of those? Can they check all of those 100%? Who knows? But I know that they're making the effort, and I think that's what's important. And as long as these terrorists know that, then they're going to probably not try to do something in that direction because they know that they could be subject to a search. Now, my question was, I was concerned about, was the responsibility for the security of the outbound and inbound international flights. Now, they are responsible for nearly 2,600 outbound international flights per day. So now what they're doing is making sure things are protected, the things that are going overseas as well, okay? Now, let me just tell you that there's also a checkpoint security and risk-based security issue because what they do is that there's nearly 950 advanced imaging technology machines with privacy-protecting software at airports nationwide. And that's a lot. You know, imaging technology. So you know you're going to walk through those, like those metal detectors, things of that nature. The other one where you have to put your arms up in the air. So they're checking. Now, last year, we don't have to count from this year, but last year there were approximately 4,239 firearms at airport checkpoints. They were averaging 11 firearms per day that they were getting. You have to look at that and say, who's that stupid that you try to go through a TSA with a, you know, with a firearm? But they detected it, all right? And that's the number. Now, I know some of those are probably police officers, probably military personnel, probably. But the reality is you need to get that cleared beforehand. I know that's what I had done at one time. I don't worry about carrying guns anymore in terms of on flights and things of that nature, but you always have to call ahead to let them know if you're going to be flying that that you're armed, that you are a that you're a police officer. Like I said, now I don't worry about it. I don't carry it when I'm flying or going to an airport. Now, let me just tell you, TSA continues to educate their people, and they do assessments. And they do 29,000 assessments a year to improve hands-on training with transportation security officers. So that's pretty good. They're not just letting it just sit, okay? They're working toward this, all right? Their basic understanding is that the vast majority of people traveling pose little or no threat to aviation, you guys. So they apply sort of like this how do I want to say it? Intelligence-driven approach, focusing on higher risk and unknown passengers. Okay, so that's who they focus on. They're not going to be focusing on little kids and, you know, probably people that are disabled, whatever the case may be, elderly people. They're going to be looking for certain things. So, you know, don't be concerned about that. They're not concerned about the everyday traveler, in all honesty. All right. Now, you can always get what they call TSA pre-check as well. All right. I know when my wife and I fly, we're TSA pre-check, so we don't have to go through the regular screening process, but you have to go through certain measures in order to get that. So you can look into that, and it makes your traveling a little bit easier. Okay. Now, the downside is that they're only doing TSA pre-check at about 200 airports. So I told you that they have like what over 400. So only half of them have TSA pre-check. So just to let you know. Now, more than 8 million passengers each week experience expedited screening. So that's a very high number, but these are also people, just for you to keep in mind, that travel a lot and that they have been pre-checked before, and there's little concern about them. Now, one of the other questions that I had that I wanted to make sure I addressed with you is this business about the inbound international flights, because we may be doing one thing, but what about the flights coming into us? That was my concern. And in fact, TSA inspects approximately 280 last point of departure airports. Okay, so those with direct flights into the United States. So all airports don't bring people in from a international standpoint. So they're checking, and there's about 109 countries with at least one last point of departure airport. So, okay. All right. Now, look, if I, just to wrap this little piece up, the law enforcement piece of TSA, I don't want you to forget about. You remember years ago they were talking about these federal air marshals? You really have not heard anything about these federal air marshals. So you should also be aware that they still have the federal air marshals, and they fly millions of miles each year, okay, helping out the aviation security. And there's more than 900 TSA canine teams that are out there also. So if you've been at the airports, you've seen them walking around with the dogs, screening passengers, cargo, and supporting other security missions, okay? Now, in 2018, more than 214,000 hours of canine explosive detection screening throughout the nation's transportation system took place. So, you guys, I understand that. Just understand the TSA is doing the best job that they can. So, even though your comfort level may be a little bit different, or once in a while you slip something past them, okay, you just weren't a target, is the bottom line. But I would be very careful about doing that. And as a final note, just to let you guys know, TSA also provides to hundreds of crew members self-defense training yearly. So crew members on these flights are also being trained from a defensive standpoint. Okay, so don't be concerned about PSA. They're doing their job. Let's work with them, though, and let's not try to slip things past them or whatever the case may be, because you may find yourself in trouble trying to do that, and now you end up missing your flight. Let's talk about the new face of terrorism in 2019. Let me tell you that they have a concern. Now, this business about the new face of terrorism, there are those out there who think that we should forget the Middle East and that it's time to prepare for attacks from the former Soviet Union. Now, over the last couple of months or so, I have been talking about Russia, Russia with the interference. Russia is doing a lot out there. All you got to do is watch the news. Now, sometimes if you're not prepared, we can be blindsided. Now, this business about always being concerned about terrorism from the Middle East, that's a real possibility. It's a real threat. And the way we think, Westerners as they call us, the way we think about this is Islamic terrorism, and it's grown dangerously outdated in terms of that terminology, quite frankly, because I can tell you, oh, I'm getting a call here. Hi, you're live on the air with Jim Potts on LA Talk Radio. Do you have a question or a comment to share?
Yes, I would just like to ask you a question concerning the blog that came out this week concerning FMLA and ADA. I'm familiar with FMLA, but I was wondering about the ADA, the American Disability Act. Is that just for women with prenatal depression, or no, can that also be for any disability?
Okay. The caller, let me enlighten my listeners real quick. Is what the caller is talking about is that every Monday I put out a blog and wearing my other hat that I wear other than on domestic terrorism on a day-by-day basis. I put a blog out for about the last 10 years. I write a blog every Monday morning about different things that are happening from the employment environment. And I know a lot of you know that I also work in the employment law arena and working with businesses to make sure that they ensure that the businesses are staying, you know, in accordance with state and federal guidelines. This past Sunday is what the caller is referring to, is that I did a blog regarding the FMLA and also with the Americans with Disabilities Act, and it was talking about pregnancy and what women may be going through after, I guess they call it postpartum depression, and that's an area that sometimes employers don't realize, that when a person does not return from a pregnancy leave, that the woman could be experiencing those related issues. So the caller is calling in to ask about the difference between the FMLA, which is the Family Medical Leave Act, which is a federal act. It was actually passed by Bill Clinton. It applies to 50 or more employees when an employer has 50 or more employees and you know, within a 75-mile area of the business. So I wanted to at least enlighten my audience in terms of where this question is coming from. Now, you're asking me about the ADA. So you're concerned about the ADA. The FMLA is federal, and so is the Americans with Disabilities Act, okay? And the issue that you're asking is, does the ADA apply to anybody in situations not associated with pregnancy? And the answer is yes. Anybody can be associated with the Americans with Disabilities Act. And it doesn't have to have anything to do with pregnancy. It could have other types of disabilities. It could be mental disabilities, physical disabilities. It could do with medical disabilities. It could have to do with making sure bathrooms are up to a certain code, as an example. So that's why when you go into restrooms, you may see that the sink is a little bit lower, or the stalls have, handrails in there, higher, commodes and things of that nature. So the general public is protected by the ADA also. So it's not just in businesses. It's for everybody.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry, so go ahead.
So, like I said, I'm familiar with FMLA, that takes care of family and individuals. And the way you go about ADA, is it the same way with FMLA? You have to go get a doctor's note and then take it to your job? Is that how that works too?
If you have a disability, okay, or it could be medical or whatever the case may be, if you think there's an ADA violation, well, yeah, because if you're talking about that you've got a medical issue, let's just say, or a medical disability, and you go to your place of employment, you get a note from your doctor, that's always very helpful. And then it's incumbent upon you under federal law to ask for an accommodation. Now, there are some states like California, as an example, where they'll turn around and say that if an employer even, recognizes the fact that a person may have a disability. In California, as an example, the employer has to engage in an interactive discussion regarding a reasonable accommodation. For the Americans with Disabilities Act, and that's federal, as you're aware, you would have to ask for the accommodation. So I think the way for you to do that is you go to your doctor, you ask the doctor for a doctor's note, and in the doctor's note, it could say, as an example, this person can only, let's just say, stand, 5 hours out of the day, or they need, 15 minutes to be able to sit during the day, depending on what their position was. It's the accommodation. So you get your doctor to recommend what the accommodation may be, and then you take that to your employer and let them know. Now, the smart thing to do is that if you have a job description, Okay, you take the job description to the doctor so that the doctor, if he's trying to give a reasonable accommodation, at least has a reasonable idea about what your you know, what your limitations may be as applied to your job duties.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you, Jim. I understand that a lot better now.
No problem.
I didn't understand the difference between the two.
You'll get my invoice in the mail. No, just kidding. It's not a problem.
Well, thank you for taking the time to explain that. I appreciate it. I
appreciate you calling in. Bye.
Bye.
Okay. Well, as many of you know, I also work in the, you know, human resources and, you know, so that's a question. And I try to do more things even from a domestic terrorism standpoint, domestic terrorism on the workplace, to try to, from time to time, talk about workplace and things of that nature. Sometimes it gets a little tough because there's so many other things going on out there. But I will try to do more with the, in terms of the, talking about the workplace. So go from there, you know. So let's go. Let's finish here. Okay, so getting back to the new face of terrorism, as I told you. You know, this business, this business about this threat in Russia, I mean, I don't really want to keep pushing Russia on you, but listen, we have to understand the moment you only look in one direction, all of a sudden something comes from a different direction. And I think that's what some of the gurus out there are trying to get across to people. Don't just think of Islamic terrorism. You have to turn your attention to other types of issues because they're out there. And there's a real threat that's coming our way. Now the former Soviet states and beyond, there's militants out there who have harbored local grievances towards us for the longest time. And these people are going to create problems for us. So we can't just keep looking at Middle Easterners and think that they're the only ones. Now, granted, the threat posed by Middle Eastern terrorists has been shrinking for some time, so you understand that. Just watch the news and see which direction it's coming from. It's not really coming sometimes from the outside. We're having more problems on the inside, so to speak, with this business about our own citizens becoming radicalized. But now, there are certain situations that are presenting a new challenge for us. Now, there's a group out there called Uzbeks. That's Uzbeks. Now, that's a terrorist group that you probably have never even heard of. But they are, you know, coming from the former Soviet countries, these are individuals that also are engaging in international terrorism, but they're somewhat under the radar because we are paying so much attention to the Islamic terrorism that's out there. And is what I'm trying to get people to understand is that don't just look in one direction. We need to look at other directions that also, you know, as well. And, you know, I've made my position very clear about the Russians. Those are individuals, in my opinion, that are going to try to interfere with everything about America. They've always been that way. They've been that way since, you know, World War II. So we have to be on guard for these individuals. And there are people out there that think that we need to start paying a little bit more attention to them. And look, let me just tell you, I'm not just talking off the top of my head with this. There's several reasons for the increase in anti-Western terrorism coming out of the post-Soviet world. Now, I will tell you, as a starter, in recent years, Middle Eastern jihadists have been too preoccupied with local conflicts in Iraq, Syria, and Yemen to head elsewhere. So a lot of them, even though we talk about this and you hear it about on the news regarding these jihadists, they're focusing their local conflicts right now in Iraq, Syria, and Yemen. You know, I mean, I know what I said earlier about these guys being upset, ISIS being upset about the fact that we killed the leaders, and yes, they're going to try to do something. But our security measures here are just a little bit tighter than some of these other countries. Now, keep in mind that the wars in the Middle East have transferred militants from Russian-speaking areas, and by the way, were previously focused on fighting repressive governments at home. So these Middle Easterners have been fighting these repressive governments, and now some are starting to, let's just say, expand out. Now, there are those who think in the coming years the terrorist threat from Russia and beyond will only increase. And with the fall of the Islamic State, Russian-speaking terrorists were mostly able to flee Iraq and Syria with a little bit more ease than Middle Eastern foreign fighters. And think about that. Russians look different. You know, Middle Easterners, you can clearly tell them. People can see them, hear those accents from that standpoint, and that's where the focus is. But don't leave. Don't lose the focus. Now, these foreign fighters, they're now in hiding in the former Soviet sphere or in Europe. They're out there, okay? And believe me when I tell you, if they don't like us, which they don't, they're going to be planning something also. Now, let me just tell you. The United States has what they call a critical language scholarship program that's run by the United States government. Out of 550 university students who will be admitted in, who were admitted this year, 105 will be studying Arabic, and it's going to be 60 studying in Russian. And according to professors that are out there, the top priority schools have such as Harvard, Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies, and even Texas A&M's Bush School of Government and Public Service. The overwhelming majority of college students who plan to work in counterterrorism still minor in Middle Eastern studies or Arabic. Now, there's also a large number of experts who have specialized in Central Asia, and they can teach new generation of analysts. Now, what does this all mean? Look, this tells you the direction that some people are looking at in this area and what we're trying to do here. So the general public has no idea about this. So that's the kind of thing that I like to get out to people. We can't just focus on Middle Easterners, okay, in terms of the, you know, people of Middle Eastern descent. We have to look in other directions as well, because it can broadside us. And then all of a sudden we hear, oh, we didn't expect that. Everything that we've been focused on is coming out of the Middle East, and now they get blindsided. So we want to be extremely careful and look in that direction as well. All right? But let me just tell you, we've got to monitor these systems. You know, the United States has been good at deleting jihadi propaganda, all right, from United States-based social media platforms. But let me just tell you, the same propaganda is still widely available on Russian-language apps such as VK and what they call OK, which are popular across post-Soviet states, all right? So keep in mind, don't get blindsided, America. Keep your eyes and your ears to the ground in that area as well. And we have to recognize that this shift, it's coming, okay? It's here. So let's pay attention to it. Now, let me focus on another concern that was expressed recently by the FBI. Federal law enforcement and Homeland Security officials are warning about the growing threat of these domestic terrorists. And they did this at the House Homeland Security Committee hearing this past week. All right? They've got a concern. They say the prevalent trend of Americans driven by violent extremist ideologies or personal grievances to commit racially and ethnically motivated attacks has become one of the most significant emerging threats to national security. All right? That's critical. That is critical. All right? We have to be on guard with this. And now is what they're saying is that the FBI director has said that we see domestic terrorism now as a persistent, evolving threat. Now, how many times have you heard me? And they're just coming out talking about this past week. I've been on the show for over a year. I've been talking about domestic terrorism. The show is all about domestic terrorism. And then occasionally, yes, I do speak about international terrorism. So, you know, the message has to get out there that these concerns are more on domestic terrorism than as much as international terrorism. We can never forget the international terrorism piece. I get that. All right? But we've got to be paying attention to some of this closer to home. Now, these concerns have also been echoed by the National Counterterrorism Center at the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. All right? And also the Department of Homeland Security's Office of Intelligence and Analysis as well. So there's people out there that are saying this, okay? And hopefully our people in Washington are paying attention to this. You know, all of this fighting that's going on back and forth, you know, and I've said this on the show before. You know, if you get into a situation where people are, our government's fighting with each other, that to me is when we're most vulnerable. That's when we're most vulnerable. Why? Because while you're busy doing that, somebody is going to, quote unquote, sneak up on us because we're not paying attention. So you have these different agencies that are out there trying to pull their coattails and say, look, we got other situations that are going on here. Now, it's acknowledged that international terrorism is very much alive and well, and we have to still stay focused on that. And I get that. But other people have talked about this rapidly advancing technology and the increasingly disorganized nature of terrorism in general make homegrown terrorism uniquely dangerous at this time. And terrorism today moves at the speed of social media. You've heard me mention that. Social media gets information out there immediately, all right, instantly. And that's part of the problem. That's part of the problem. Now, we have to understand, and the government has to understand, and our politicians have to understand, is don't let your guard down. Now, you've heard me say this before. Please, please, write to your congressmen and your legislators, and tell them to stay focused, and to try to do the things that need to be done to protect us as a nation. Now, it's also been suggested that the counterterrorism tools that have been developed since the aftermath of the September 11th attacks, there are certain tools that are in place, and that's a good thing. So I'm not trying to tell you that we're completely vulnerable here. I'm not telling you that. Is what I am telling you is that, and even the FBI director and Department of Homeland Security are telling us that we still have to keep an eye on what's going on here closer to home. With these people becoming radicalized and on the social media outlets. And you've also heard me tell you, don't get complacent. All right? Terrorism may no longer be viewed as the number one threat to the country. All right? We have to look at the threat from an inside as well. All right? And I think that's important as we move forward. Terrorism can come from all different angles, including the people that are within our own country. And when you really think about it, and I talk about this in some of the trainings that I give, how many real international events have we really had? We have more events from terrorism, from American citizens, than we do from an international standpoint. So you have to watch them. Okay? We have to watch them. Now, one of the things we're going to do here, and I'm going to, I don't know how to, here's what I'm going to do. I don't want to get into the politics again because you've heard me say that. But when we say we have to watch what's going on, we also have to pay attention to the infiltrations coming into our country. There's another growing threat that we've already recognized. And now I got a recent United States Customs and Border Protection report that says that they've apprehended several members of known Islamic terrorist organizations crossing our southern border. Now, I know there's a lot of talk out there right now about the southern border and everything. And let me just tell you, it's not just the southern border. And that's another point that I want to make because I do get emails from people about the southern border and things of that nature and the wall and all those kind of things. But we still have to be concerned about the southern border. There are people slipping across. But again, I will emphasize, it's no longer just the southern border. We have to pay attention also to people slipping through and coming through from Canada. Now, they've had several individuals, and I think I've mentioned this once before, and another guy that was just prosecuted. But the Canadian border is not being safeguarded because all of the focus is on the southern border. So nobody's clamoring for a wall, across Canada. So don't send me emails about that. I get that. Because we're not thinking about Canada and we're thinking more about the southern border. But that southern border has been in a situation where a large number of these individuals have been caught and captured coming across. Now, I'm not just talking about Middle Eastern, and we already know about the drug cartels and the gang members, et cetera. But they got countries where these, what they call them, law enforcement calls them special interest aliens. Let's put it that way. And those are people that are coming into the United States from 35 Middle Eastern, African, and Asian countries that are associated with terrorist groups. 35. Texas alone, you guys, last year reported 439 cases of people from these countries, including Afghanistan, Iran, Iraq, Lebanon, Libya, Pakistan, and Syria. They were either caught crossing the border or presenting themselves at ports of entry without permission to enter. And the report that I saw also said that the authorities have reported 143 land border crossing encounters with watch-listed individuals in the southwest border states, you know, as well. So this is still serious, okay? So I get a lot of information on this from people, excuse me, and people sending me emails. I'm not trying to be biased about any of this, but let's be honest. There's a lot more instances out there that we have to be watching out for. So I do agree. All right. So those of you that send me this business about, you know, the southern border and the wall and all this, I get that. And I do agree because I've gotten some emails from people talking about Canada as well. So that's why I'm addressing it. Yes, we have situations with Canada also, and these individuals slipping through from Canada. And we do have to be paying attention to both sides. You know, my whole thing is, I tell everybody, we all have to be aware, okay? We all have to be aware of our surroundings, what we're doing. That includes the United States, too. And I know that we have all these agencies out there that are looking for this. I want to give you those assurances that I told you earlier. You know, these individuals that are trying to protect us are working very hard. There's no doubt about this. But there's been reports out there about Canada-based violent extremists inspired by terrorist groups such as ISIS and Al-Qaeda and their affiliates. I get that. And those reports have also talked about there's no known international terrorist organizations operating in Mexico. No evidence that any terrorist group is targeting United States citizens in Mexican territory. So I get that as well, okay? So, you know, sending me emails about some of this and, you know, talking about this is not really going anywhere because I do understand all of that, okay? I understand all of that. And I agree about Mexico. Now, the one thing that I will say is that when you start talking about MS-13, MS-13, don't forget, is the terrorist organization. And they, in fact, also originated, as I recall, in Mexico. And they are technically a, you know, could be considered a domestic terrorism group, so to speak. And you've heard me mention about them. But, you know, we should keep our focus on our borders wherever they are. So for those of you that are writing in, you know, I have addressed the fact that it's not just a concern from Mexico. It's a concern from Canada as well. So I don't disagree with you. I try to get to as much of this on the air as I can. You know, it's difficult. And that's why I ask people, you know, I tell people, you know, send me topics. You send me the topics, I'm going to talk about this. There's no doubt about that. Okay? I try to be very open-minded with all of this because I'm out there trying to protect everybody. Again, you hear me, I don't get into the politics of any of this because I don't care about the politics. What I care about is making sure we're all safe out there. You know, we should be able to go to the movies, go to concerts, other outdoor events without having to worry about, you know, our personal well-being. We're going out there to have a good time. So paying attention to your surroundings and things of that nature, that to me is what's important, and being able to give out those kind of tips. And I will say my crew, you know, we've done a fabulous job. We've done over now 25,000 people that we've trained in active shooter training. We've done well over 100 businesses in the last couple of years and helping to secure their work environments as well, writing their procedure and protocols, you know, for security reasons. So as an organization, we're out there doing what we can, all right? But it's never enough. So I would encourage everybody out there to talk to their employers, get to their employers to recognize the importance of doing active shooter training. It doesn't have to be through us. Don't get me wrong. Anybody, just get the training. I know a lot of the local law enforcement agencies are trying to do it as well. So wherever you have to turn to get it, because I think that's what's important. Some people have told me that they do it online, have learned some things online, but I don't think that that's really the way to go, quite frankly. Now, look, we're running out of time here, so I'm going to pick up next week on talking about this business about the parental responsibility laws, because I still think that's important as a follow-up to some inquiries that I did get. And I also am going to talk next week about Homeland Security a little bit deeper, because they have two missions, all right? They have two missions, and I want to talk to you about what those missions are, and hopefully that'll give you a better feeling of security, all right? Okay, you've been listening to Jim Potts on LA Talk Radio. It's time to close out the show. Be sure to join me next week. And do me a favor, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Hey, don't forget my book, by the way, Domestic Terrorism Safety Tips is doing very well. It's on Amazon. Just go ahead and go to Amazon and type in James William Potts, and it'll come up. And if you get it and you like it, do a review for me, okay? Until then, look, guys, be aware, be vigilant, be safe, but more importantly, be a reluctant victim. Until next week, be safe.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.